Hello and welcome to Blab Lab, EcoRI News semi-monthly podcast. I'm Joanna Detz, Executive Director of EcoRI News. You don't have to have your own yard to experience the joys of gardening. Urban community gardens are popping up everywhere, allowing city dwellers to grow their own food and empowering low-income communities to control what goes on their plates. Today, we dig into community gardens.
With me today is Norma Anderson. She's on the board of the Fox Point Community Garden. Hello,
hi.
Norma.
Hi.
Also with me is Steve Sheeky. He's the volunteer coordinator at the Grow Up Community Garden in Woonsocket. Hi, Steve.
Hi.
And also from the Grow Up Community Garden is Wendy. She's the garden coordinator at the community garden there. Hi, Wendy.
Hello.
What are the trends that you're seeing in terms of community garden? There seems to be a renewed interest in urban farming. Is this something that you're all seeing on the ground? I can start with Norma if she wants to jump in.
Sure. We're seeing a big growth in interest in our neighborhood. We have a lot of young people at Brown and RISD who are joining us. We have a lot of professional people like doctors and lawyers and all kinds of people that live around there that don't have a backyard, that don't have a sunny backyard to grow things. So we provide a space, they rent it, and it's a very, very moderate cost, and they are expected to take care of it. That's the big challenge. It's fine when you have a little piece of real estate, but you do have to be successful as a gardener. Mm-hmm. And some of them come in with very little knowledge of what to plant, how to plant it, how to take care of weeds, what's seasonal and what's not seasonal. So there's a lot of experimenting going on, but it's really fun, really great seeing them experiment.
I think for our garden, it's a little bit of a different audience, demographic than what you might see at Fox Point. We have a lot of low to moderate income people in Woonsocket, and who definitely don't have their own transportation. So it's a matter of being able to, they want to provide healthier food for their families, as there does seem to be a little bit of a food desert situation happening in Woonsocket right now.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that they're taking control of their own family's diet in one manner. That's why we see a big interest in our garden as well.
Yeah. And I also recently, we've seen in the last 2 years an interest in the community organizations around us, which was something new, wanting to be part of the garden, wanting to have a garden bed and expose their clients to fresh vegetables, mm-hmm. which was really great to see that growth. Schools and a couple local community organizations being part of the garden versus just it being individuals.
The garden is really a culture in a way, and we have tempted to get more of the old-time neighbors in Fox Point to join our garden, but somehow they don't stay. They would prefer to have like a raised bed or a container in their pavement in their backyards, which is kind of their tradition anyway. But we have a few low-income people. What we see is a lot of interest in health. So it's the interest in planting healthy kale, a lot of kale going in, a lot of really healthy things. It's interesting.
What about you guys, kale in Woonsocket?
You know, it is quite funny because we do have people that plant kale and then they donate it to our homeless shelter because all of our gardeners have to donate 10% of what they grow to the 5 local food pantries we identified and the Woonsocket homeless shelter, which our organization runs. And the people, it's so funny that they don't know how to cook it. Mm-hmm. They don't know what to cook with it. So we had to provide, okay, here's a little tidbit, like this is what kale is, this is what, so it's also teaching them too, new recipes, it's teaching the low-income families that are receiving the donations new foods that maybe their family has never seen before. So I think, you know, it's trifold. It's many, many aspects to it. It's not only just the people growing it and being able to provide it for their family, it's then being able to provide it for other low-income families, you know, in the neighborhood.
And it's two-way, too, because they also, a lot of them are first-generation immigrants to the U.S., and a lot of times they'll be bringing traditional foods that they're bringing from their home country. So they're exposing us to different types of foods that we don't normally see also. So it's been kind of interesting.
Yes.
We have a plot sponsored by Temple Bethel, and they have a person that represents them, and and takes care of a large plot that they pay for, and then an additional plot. And they donate everything from their plot to Camp Street Ministries, which takes donations every Friday. And it's a very, very good thing that they are doing. And they actually, we harvest from other people's plots as long as we have permission. So every Thursday night we do a harvest for the Camp Street Ministries. We also have some chefs that are very interested in experimenting with plants. So we have one man from Jamaica. He is introducing us to some interesting new vegetables like callaloo. So we do have some of that that you have.
I just wanted to back up a little bit. You mentioned, Norma, at the beginning that sometimes there's a learning curve with the people who come into a community garden. And what sort of resources are available to those people who are just starting out?
We have potlucks probably once a month, and we try to have a program prior to the potluck. We don't always get a lot of participation. We change the nights. It's very informal. And that's one of the ways that people learn how to make different things, because everybody's bringing something different to the potluck. So that's a really good way to exchange recipes and ideas. So we talk about soil. We talk about different things that are current. People that can come in and speak about certain things. We did have a seed swap fairly recently where it was in February, where people are starting to get that energy going for wanting to do something. So that's when we have our seed swap, and we give away seed trays, and people go around and share seeds.
That's so great. Yeah. Very similar to us. We have community days at the garden, prep days, plant days, where we provide things like we provide loom, compost loom to our gardeners as part of their minimal fee that they have to pay as well. And we try to place new gardeners next to master gardeners or near them so that they can get to know their neighbor. And if they have questions at the community days, that's where, you know, they'll be able to get those questions answered. Because we do have a lot of newbies and they're not sure. And some of them come in with this big plan and it doesn't always work out. Other ones come in not knowing anything and know where to start. And so it's really great having that community base to be able to talk about, you know, what to grow, when to grow it, what's successful in our garden, what hasn't been successful. We definitely, you know, try to identify that in the meetings we have ahead. We try to talk about some problems that we had the year before and how did we resolve them so that people are prepared for it the next year.
And we've had some good partnerships, like with the URI Master Gardeners, who has stepped up with the annual seed donation that they, the seed drive that they do. So we have a good mix of starter plants and seeds that we have available, and we help gardeners get those planted, and then we give them a little rundown of what to expect when they grow those plants, and how to avoid, you know, the woodchucks and the deer that inevitably come through.
Right.
So it's a learning experience for them.
Yeah. And for us every year.
It's definitely something you have to stick with. You can't just come in and out of leadership in a community garden. You have to have a basic crew of dedicated people that are willing to spend the time and sometimes the money to make things happen.
I want to talk a little bit about maybe some of the challenges that you face in particular, because both of your gardens are in an urban setting. One of them, I imagine, is soil and soil quality. And if you could maybe just speak to that, how do you manage the soil? Do you have a compost pile? How do you amend the soil? You want to jump in, Wendy and Steve?
Definitely. We, being as Woonsocket, the area that our garden is heavily post-industrial, and we did do some initial testing, and there were some things that really kind of sounded some alarms for us initially. And through some guidance with the Master Gardeners and the UMass Ag Extension, we made a decision to raise all of our beds in the garden because it was just very necessary. We had to, you know, really address some concerns of the gardeners about, you know, with this really, you know, healthy. So, but through subsequent testing and previous years at the garden, everything is fine. But we do have an active composting system going with donated pallets from, I think it's the Ace Hardware in Bellingham, right across the line. And so we have the active composting. We encourage gardeners to have the large plots to do their own individual composting. So we really encourage them to make the soil as healthy as they can to grow their food in.
Well, we started off with the strapping board to plot bought out everything. That was way too low. Our first year was very unsuccessful because the soil hadn't been mm-hmm. amended. Mm-hmm. So over time and building up the dimension, the height of the beds, we were able to get much more compost and soil in there. We do have our own compost bins. We have compost and we have raised beds and chips in the aisles, and it can be very, very nice looking when everybody participates. We're having to clean up these next 3 weekends.
We actually have a unique situation in our garden. As other gardens are kind of busting at the seams and looking on ways mm-hmm. to expand, we have a lot of space in the garden.
Mm-hmm. And we're not looking to expand.
No, not
too much work.
Not right now, at least. We were originally trying to do a large scale operation where we're going to do intensive mm-hmm. farming. But once the soil situation was discovered and we discovered we had to do raised beds, mm-hmm. it became much smaller scale, and yeah. we had to do individual plots rather than large tract. Yeah. So we have large swaths of turf, unfortunately, that we have to take care of. Yeah. So we're kind of in a unique situation where we don't have to worry about chipping the aisles and things mm-hmm. like that, but we have to worry about mowing and weeding and mm-hmm. all the things that go along with that.
And, mm-hmm. and weed whacking.
we've had a really good set of maintenance people and volunteers yep. to step up to help maintain that part of the garden. It ends up being probably one of the more intense, time-intensive things we have to do is just mowing the lawn yes. and trimming the hedges.
Mm-hmm. I mowed it twice last year. I can tell you it's very intense yeah. and long. Yeah. We have actually 45 raised beds, so it is quite large. Mm-hmm.
Yep. We have 110 beds. The measurement for the small bed is 4 by 10. We have double beds. We have a bee keeper. We have two hives right now, and they have both survived the winter, which is a very, very good thing. Because a lot of people lost their hives.
We have a couple of minutes left, and I just wonder if maybe you all could share a story that's just like, oh, that's so community garden. Like a success story or something that could only happen in a community garden.
Cool. I have something. A couple of years ago when I first got involved with the Grow Up Community Garden, I had started off as a volunteer working with a summer youth jobs program, and that's how I actually got connected with Family Resources. So I was had a group of maybe about 15 teenagers in the garden for a few hours in the morning before it got really intensively hot. And it was a very educational part as far as, you know, most of these kids don't know that a vegetable doesn't come shrink-wrapped in polystyrene and plastic. So a game that we did was we went through the garden and had them blindfolded, you know, run their fingers along, try to identify by feel, like the hairy tomatoes and the smell of the mm-hmm. tomato plant and the peppers and the cucumbers. And so it was very educational for them, and they didn't realize they could eat squash flour and nasturtium. And so they really had no clue as to, they didn't have that connection to their food, and to see them come alive. And I still interact with some of the kids in my day job now, and you can see that it really just turned them around as far as how they interact with food and themselves and their own health. So it was very awakening.
One thing I can think of is that it doesn't really matter what a person's background is in a garden. The main interest is the conversation about what's growing in your garden, what's got bugs on it, what are you going to do about it, you know, the problems that you're having with whiteflies or aphids or cucumber beetles or bean beetles. Everybody's always got something that's a little bit dramatic to talk about. They could have a master's degree or a PhD or be a doctor, medical doctor or a lawyer, but you don't even know that. You're just talking about your stuff and your plot.
It's a great equalizer.
It is.
Cool. Well, thanks for coming, and we'll talk to you soon, and we'll get out in the garden.
Hey, thank you, Jen.
Thank you.